Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome to Just the Runners podcast. This is episode 197. I'm Bruce McIntosh. I'm here with Rick Blair, my co-host today. And we'll be joined here on Zoom in just a few minutes by none other than Bart Yasso. A writer, editor, and chief officer of running, I believe it was called, at Runner's World magazine. I think most runners, anybody in the running, probably knows who he is. All right. And how are you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm okay. Feeling good.
Yeah. Good, good.
I haven't had a chance to talk to you for a while, but
I don't know. It's been a while. That's a lot of shoes you got back there.
Only this side of mine. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, and are those all, they look like all running shoes back there too.
There's a couple at the bottom that are, I think there's one pair that isn't.
Okay.
I got about 10 or funny. 11 currently I rotate through.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of them are doing
10 or 11.
A couple of them are getting kind of old. I really should retire or make them grass cutting shoes.
Yeah.
I've just added to it this couple weeks ago because I'm in Columbus.
Yeah, that's the 15th? Is that right?
Yep. So just over 2 weeks to go, two and a half. You got anything big?
How you feeling?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing the Baltimore Marathon, actually, the day before, the 14th.
Is Baltimore. Okay. That's a pretty good one. I haven't heard too much about it. But
yeah, I mean, it won't surprise you to know that Scooby has run that one. And he was, yeah, he had some nice things to say about it. Baltimore is not like, I don't know it as a city very well. The last time I was there was, man, so long ago, almost 20 years. But my mom has family there. Yeah, anyway, Scooby says it's good. I don't know.
Works for me, but I'm not sure. I don't know. He never seemed like he's too picky about his races.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he always, it's like you wear the shirt for a run or something, and he sees it, and he's like, oh, that's a good race. You remember it so differently. You're like, yeah, no, that was awful. Like, I would like to try to forget that one. But, you know, it's all right. Like you said, I don't think he's too picky about some of that stuff.
I haven't been running as many races this year, so.
Yeah.
I've been trying to concentrate more on just training for the marathon. It's something different for me.
As opposed to just like banking a bunch of races, is that what you mean?
Yeah, normally I would have done several races. I'd be training for the marathon, you know, try to work three or four races into the training and stuff like that. And this year, well, I think a couple of years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I probably averaged close to 20 a year for a while there. I forget how many I did last year.
Yeah, that's a lot of racing. Oh, will you do the Peace Race?
Nope. It's the week before, so
not even the Peace Race.
I haven't done the Peace Race in a few years. We started me, Aaron, and Brandon, we started this thing. We were going to the Peace. We would run and then go from the Lily Pond, then just stay there and wait for the race to come through and spectate. And we've been having
I've seen you there. Yeah.
So I just don't like the idea of racing the week before my big marathon. And
sure.
To me, it's just doesn't work.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
And
hey, you know, actually, do you know Christy Shoemaker? You know who she is?
I know the name. I don't really know her, I don't think.
She would actually be a good guest. I ran a little bit with her today and was telling her that I was doing this. And then while I was saying it, I thought she would be a really good guest for you. She's, I can put you in touch with her, but she's passionate about running, which is something that you're looking for. And she really is big on like, trying to, encourage kids in it. particularly, seeing a lack of sort of like pre-junior high running programs. But yeah, I think she would probably be a good guest for you at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that'll put you guys in touch. Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, who's gonna know, Bruce? I don't know. How much, so how often are you doing these now? I think you've like really kind of dialed it back a little bit.
I did some. I'm trying to get back into it. I want to do like two a month. For a
Okay.
while there, I was pretty weekly, and
Yeah,
something like
right.
that. How's your music career going?
Oh, slowly. Actually, it's like really, really, it's like fits and starts, like really busy. We're always working in some capacity, but as far as it, it's hard to call it a career.
I don't want us to call it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know. I don't know what to call it. It's not a hobby, right? Like, it's not a hobby in the sense of like, like cooking could be a hobby or something. And,
I
we're
consider this a
actually,
hobby. Podcasting's a hobby for me because I don't
yeah.
know what else to call it.
Yeah.
I have no sponsors, no income off it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, like we released two full-length records this year, and we're going to release some more music in a couple of months. And we're still writing songs, and we're still playing shows, and we're still having fun. Nobody's making any money yet, which is not, it's not the point. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. So I don't know what to say about it other than that.
Mark,
There
hello
we go. Hey,
there.
there he is.
Hey,
What's happening?
How you doing, Bart?
you
Doing
just
all
wait.
right. Can't complain.
Do you remember Rick Blair?
Yes, I do
Hey, all
remember.
right.
All
Good.
right.
Two. Youngstown, Ohio's finest.
Yeah. Well, they weren't available, so you got me and Bruce.
That's right.
Oh,
Oh. How are
yeah.
you? How are you doing today, Mark?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Just knocked out three chapters in a book I'm working on. It's been brutal. But I'm about 90, well, actually almost 95% done, thank God.
That's great.
Oh, it's been 3 months of constant, but close. And I'm ahead of the deadline, manuscript deadline, by probably 2 weeks, which is good.
That is
Is this
good.
something we should be looking for soon, or?
I don't, the next steps will be some editing on my text, and it's like 70,000 words, so it's got to be a lot of editing going on, and then the photos, so it's gonna take a while. But,
Sure.
and I'm not even legally not even allowed to talk about it, which is crazy. So
Yeah.
yeah, I can't mention the publisher or the name of the book or anything. It's crazy. Well, once it's out, it'll be, then there's no secret. I actually think once it's goes on sale, those pre-sales that
Yeah.
go
Yeah.
on, and once it has a pre-sale, then I can talk about it. But the contract stated all this stuff, like, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do, I'm like, man, are you sure that how do you want me to write this thing? But
Can you talk about like your process for writing it? Like how much I guess,
yes.
how do you discipline yourself to sit down and get to work on that?
Yeah, so it's 101 segments. And segments are, there's some segments are bigger than others based on the
Sure.
subject. And I just tried to at least get two segments done every day. And some days I was able, most of the days I was able to do it, but some days it just didn't work out. I just didn't have it. Turned my computer off and went golfing. Stuff like that. And then I felt better the next day. Like sometimes it just doesn't work. You just don't have the flow. You don't, if I didn't feel right, I wasn't gonna write just crap. So I just said, okay, I don't have it today.
Sure.
I'm gonna just, it's just like going out for a run and you feel sluggish and you can just keep going, but you're not doing yourself any good. So,
Yeah.
but
Well,
it's been fun. Hopefully it'll be fun in the end when it's published and everything works out. Should know in a couple of weeks.
We'll have to have you back talk about it when you're allowed to talk about it, I guess.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. I do have your other books. I did read them before, so I look forward to the next one. Wow. Race Everything.
Yeah. Which Race Everything. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was my last, that was the last request I got at Runner's World. It said, you've raced everything, you got to pull this thing together. Really, I was like the last 6 months I was there, that's what I was. One of the things I was working on. But my first two books, I had, you know, a co-author on both of them, which really helped because I also, you know, I couldn't just stop my job and write a book.
Right.
So co-authors were really big. This book, nobody, I mean, no one has seen anything that I've written. Nobody.
They figure you're retired.
Not my wife, not my
stepdad. You don't need one.
Yeah. I don't need a co-author on this one. So I'm, but it's really interesting that no one has seen it. I got no guidance from the publisher other than, you know, once we made an outline and what they call a book map, what's going to go on each page and all this, and how much content has to be on each page. Once I had that, you know, I got an email that said, go, and that start writing. And just be done by October 21st. That was basically the only thing. And then I had to make like two tweaks to things. And I emailed the publisher and they said, oh yeah, those tweaks are fine. And that's the only thing I've heard. So
wow,
it'd be interesting. I mean, and I did send them a message. Last week. And I said I was at 90%. So now I'm almost at 95%. So they were happy to hear that I was at 90%.
Yeah, that's great.
Still, no one has seen anything. It's kind of cool. My stepkids were looking at my computer and they said, don't even think about it. Get out of here. I don't trust them. That's what I was worried about. They'll change something.
Yeah, right.
Screw me up. So they didn't go anywhere near my office.
You got me curious now.
Yeah. I'll let you know as soon as I can. I should know more, you know, after I turn the manuscript in. They may allow me to at least talk about it a little bit, I would think.
Yeah.
Is there a benefit, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking time out of your day.
Oh, yeah. To talk with us. Nice to see you guys.
Yeah, you too.
So you're both running Columbus?
I'm running Columbus. He's going to Baltimore on the 14th.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Columbus, I hear, is a fast course. Baltimore, I hear, is a hilly course.
I don't know. I mean, we're still a couple of weeks out. I guess I haven't studied it as much as I ought to. So I don't know enough. I did run Columbus, and Columbus is pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, middle of Ohio tends to be. So.
Yeah. I like this topic. So, you know, you guys take it on and we'll roll with it and see what we come out with.
Thought we'd talk about being race ready. When you were, my first question was when you were racing a lot, how did you, was there any way you knew you were race ready, or was it just a feeling, or?
Yeah, you know, that I like those two words, race ready, where basically I always train like I was always race ready, but sometimes the training is, you know, feels really good and it's easy and it's flawless and you get in all your workouts. And then sometimes stuff happens, work, family, whatever gets in the way. But no matter what kind of shape you're in, you need to go to the starting line with those two words in mind. I'm race ready. Because if you don't, you just doubt yourself. Like, you know, runners that go to the starting line of a marathon and think, oh man, I should have done like one more 20 miler. That's like the worst thing to think about. Like, and you're thinking about that, like you're standing on the starting line and you're going, oh man, Joe did like 10, 20 milers and I only did 6 or 4, whatever it is, you know, whatever numbers. That's not the way to do it. Like, you got to get to the starting line healthy as you can be, and race ready, just meaning you're ready to race. Like, yes, you've had, I'm sure, you know, people have been running as long as we have, you've had better training cycles and you felt better at other times, but if you got a starting line, two words you use, race ready, good things are going to happen.
So can you convince yourself of that? I mean, I guess that, let me phrase it differently by pointing to the examples of, you know, like as if people know you've got a race coming up and they say, how do you feel? Or you feel like you're ready? You know, if you feel like this or that or the other thing. And there are times where I know that's happened to me and my answer is, oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Because of course there's, and we're, if we speak specifically about the marathon, there's so many variables and so many unknowns yeah. once you start doing that. But so that's reality. And then there are some times when there have been times when I don't feel ready at all. And then there are some times where it's just, yeah, like you said, you've got a great training block. So, I mean, can you convince yourself of that? And how, if you can, how do I do
it? Yeah, no, I you can convince yourself. I think it has to just like happen organically. You can't overthink it and be crazy about it. And it just comes together. I remember the first time I did a marathon on Saturday and a marathon on Sunday, back-to-back days. And that was not anything I did in my younger days when we just tried to run every race as fast as you can. Right. But when I did the, you know, back-to-back marathons, I raced pretty well on Saturday. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to be, you know, dead beat on, you know, I'm going to just be worthless on Sunday, but I'm still going to go out and do it. And I think because I was just so relaxed, I actually really ran well on Sunday. In fact, yeah. I felt I had a better day than on Saturday. And I was really happy with my race on Saturday. And I thought about that later, and I just thought it, the only difference was I was just happy to do it, and I just wasn't, there was no expectation. I didn't set a goal. Yeah. Well, you know, I was just, okay, you ran a marathon yesterday, you're going to be beat up, just go out and do it. And it just, I started out slower than I normally would, and it just worked. And wow. I remember, like, at 20 miles, I thought, man, I actually really feel good. In fact, I feel better at 20 here today than I did at 20 miles yesterday. And, you know, when I look back on that, I think the only thing was I just let it happen. You know, I didn't get crazed about what pace and all. I just went out real easy and just see what's going to happen, see how I feel. And I actually had a really good race. I think that was one thing that taught me. We put so much calculation and everything and all this thought process, and sometimes we overthink it and we get too internalized about it. You know, you still gotta go out and race and have a plan, but I'll give you a perfect example. I know for a fact people doing a marathon, they start checking weather.com like 20 days before the race, because I get emails from people. They go, hey, it's going to rain in my marathon. What should I wear? The temp's going to be this. And you know, I'm thinking they're running like whatever marathon's coming up in 3 days. And I go, oh, because I say, what marathon are you doing? And I'll say, Columbus in like 3 weeks. I'm like, what? You're going by a forecast 3 weeks? Do you want me to know where? Like, first off, leave me alone and get back to me in like 2.5 weeks. And I'll be happy to talk to you.
But that's like, I got a book to write. Leave me alone.
Yeah. You should tune into the weather, but you should look at weather.com 7 times a day for 3 weeks leading up to the race. That's when you work yourself up and you overthink it. It's just crazy. You know, check the weather like, you know, a week out, and then a couple days before you really get a good feel, because they can really predict weather pretty good these days compared to the old days. And then you get a pretty good feel, but even that may be wrong. Things change, fronts come in, stuff happens. But you go, you start, you know, if you got a pack and you're going some traveling somewhere, you got to look, you know, maybe 2-3 days out and get thinking, okay, you got a ballpark of where the temperature is going to be and what you're going to face. And then when you do it like that, then I always do what you call ski to conditions. If it is going to be hot or high humidity or whatever it is, you adjust and you have that mindset before, not just right when you get to the starting line. It's like, oh, it's warm, I'm gonna do this. Well, you gotta have that, you gotta think like, okay, on that pace I thought I could run it, it's not going to work on a day like today. So
right,
ski the conditions. But it's one of those things people go, they get crazy about it. When you're already thinking about what you're going to wear in a marathon that's 3 weeks from now, that's a little obsessive. And it consumes your, it gets in your head. Like, just, you got to be smarter than that. But I ask that question all the time at when I'm speaking at these dinners the day before the race. And I'll say, okay, everyone, be honest. How many checked weather.com every day for the past 3 weeks? And like 90% of the hands go up.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talk about that second consecutive day and being surprised and kind of balancing out what your kind of like your gut is telling you. I feel pretty good. I feel better than I did yesterday. Yeah. Versus looking at the watch or looking at the clock on the sideline or whatever it is. One of my fastest times in a marathon was when I sort of mentally disappeared for about 15 miles. Just the mile, they just clicked by.
Yeah.
And when I sort of woke up in the midst of that, I realized that I was running much faster than I intended. And I got a little panicked about it and then said, well, the heck with it. Let's just keep going. Yeah. And it was sort of like holding that, art and science together.
Yeah.
Just letting it work itself out. So.
Yeah. I'm glad you don't know that much about the Baltimore course. So you haven't obsessed over it. Like, oh my God, there's a hill here, a hill here.
I mean, maybe that's irresponsible of me, but I mean, this is
I think it's good.
I mean, I don't know if it's my age, my inexperience or my experience, you know, this will be my 21st marathon. So it's not like I've never done this before, but for some, I'm like, let's just go and do this. And I'm taking a trip with my wife. Let's go have a good time. So.
Yeah.
Well, where Rick runs, I mean, in Mill Creek Park, we have plenty of hills for him to be prepared for. So he should be okay on the hills, actually.
Yeah, that's good. Some
people like killing horses.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I go back to the Smoky Mountain Marathon, which was like 25 years ago. And I was really sick with Lyme disease, and my running was really in the dumps. But I went on new treatments. I felt a little better. Got out there, started running again, started to feel good. And I go to this race in right outside of Knoxville, like Smoky Mountain Marathon. And we're at a dinner the night before, and everyone's talking about this 3 mile climb at mile. It was from 19 to 22. It was 3 mile climb. I mean, it said it on back in the entry form days. It said it on the entry form. On the map, it was everywhere. You knew it was there. And all these runners went out and looked at the course and drove up and down this hill 2 times. And they all said to me, hey, we'll take you out and show you the hill. I said, no, it'll be there tomorrow. They're not taking it away. And I see on the entry form, it says right here, it goes from mile 19 to 22. There's different, you know, some of it's a little steep and then it levels off a little, but it's basically a 3 mile uphill. And I said, it's not going to change. It's going to be there tomorrow. I'll see it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And all they got, I mean, they obsessed about it. They were that's all they talked about at the dinner. I didn't say a word about it. So race day, I took the lead on that hill, took the lead in the race and went on and win the thing by a couple of minutes. And I swear that 2 or 3 of the guys that I beat, it was because they thought about that hill for 19 miles. I thought about it in the context of I couldn't wait to get there and challenge myself on the hill. They were thinking, oh, this hill is brutal. It's 3 miles long. Oh, my God. What are they? Who puts a 3 mile hill at mile 19 in a marathon? What's wrong with these people? And I swear to God, that was the total difference in the race, because I've raced these guys before. They're from Michigan that I knew. And I've raced them before, and we were pretty close together. I think that day, I did have a good day. I felt good the whole race. But I swear, we got to the bottom of that hill. They obsessed about it. I was looking for the challenge to, you know, conquer this hill, not beat the hill. The course and the hill wins, but I was up for the challenge and ready to take it on. And I didn't look at it three times, so I didn't know where the little grades were that were steeper or whatever. It was there. I knew where I was going uphill for 3 miles.
Right.
I remember getting to the top, and then it leveled off, and then we had a nice little descent to the finish, and we had a little turnaround where I could see behind me. I'm like, there's nobody behind me. Like, I couldn't see anyone for like 2 minutes. And I thought, wow, I'm going to win this race unless I fall over, you know, or some tree falls on me or something like that. It's going to take some kind of something like that to not win this race. It was a cool feeling. But I swear that's the reason why I did well in that race. You know, I think you should look at a course map or, you know what the course is. You know, to go out and drive a hill, like, what is the, just made no sense to me. And
sure.
You know, those guys, I'm telling you, they drove it like 3 times. I'm like, no,
it'll yeah, be I like there. That. It's going to be there. I'll see it tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And it was there.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, a lot of it's the mental part. Did you have any, like, rituals or superstitions or anything you've heard of you do or other people? Or
I didn't have any superstitions, but it is mental, obviously. You know, that question everybody wants to know is, what is the marathon, you know, 50% physical, 50% mental, or 90-10 or 80-20, whatever it is. I have no idea what it is, to be honest, but there is a mental side to it. But I can tell you this, the later in the race, the latter part of a marathon, it is more mental than physical. That I can guarantee you. Yeah. Because that's where your body starts to break down, and you've been out there, and you know, it's easy to try to talk yourself out of pushing, but you wanna stay in that zone. And I always thought that way. Like, yes, I don't know if it's 80-20, 80 physical, 20 mental, but I do know when I get to mile 22 or 23, it's a lot more mental than physical, so be ready for it. So I always had that mindset. I don't know if that, you know, that's the way I always thought. And I know, how do you prove how much is mental and physical? I don't know if you can prove it, but yeah. It makes sense that the latter part of a race is more mental because stuff happens. Like you've been pushing for 2 hours or however long you've been out there. And, you know, it's easy to talk yourself out of a race. Just say, yeah, if I back off, it won't hurt that bad. You know, but you don't, that's not what you want to do. So I always have that mindset of thinking that when I get to that, whenever it gets tough, that it is going to be more mental than physical. And this is when you really have to be mentally strong. I don't think that way at the start. I think of that way later in the race.
So can you, since we're talking about being race ready, how do you prepare for that aspect of things? You know, because you've run it before, you know that at some point in the last 10K, 5 to 10K, it's just going to be more of a mental challenge. How do you prepare for that?
Yeah, I guess that is really, we have to do it in training. So,
yeah.
You know, I didn't in the olden days, 45 years ago when I started doing this stuff, I didn't do those long runs where you finish fast.
Oh, yeah.
Last 2 or 3 miles at like a race pace, but run the first, you know, whatever you're doing. If you're doing a 20, you run the first 16 or 17 at the proper pace, which is about, 45 seconds to a minute slower than race pace. And then, but finish strong or finish fast and really do like 3 miles at race pace. And that's really that way that, because that, to do that, you have to be thinking, because you got to be going, okay, coming up on mile 17, I got to put the hammer down these last 3 miles and run them at race pace. And that gets you in that mindset that, you know, you're doing it in training, then it becomes natural when you do it in a race. And that's the thing I always tell people, you have to, what you want to accomplish in a race, you must mimic in training so that your body knows how to do it. If you don't do that, it's all new to your body and you're in the race, and that's not good. You want, whatever happens on race day, you want to have simulated that already in training So your body, your mind, your body, everything knows what you're doing. That makes sense?
Makes sense to me. Should I feel like I should have talked to you 8 weeks ago, but
yeah. I wish I knew some of this stuff 45 years ago when I started.
Yeah.
Right. So it was a different world, you know, going to the start of the Boston Marathon, they tell you not to drink water and they hand you salt tablets and say,
yeah, right. Right.
Drinking water is for sissies. Don't drink any water. Mm-hmm. Here, take these salt tablets. This will help you out.
Uh-huh.
And we did it because we thought, oh, this guy works at the Boston Marathon. He must know what he's doing.
It must be. Yeah, it must be an expert.
He didn't know at all what he was doing.
Yeah.
Now it's
finished looking like a potato chip. We had this white salt caked on our faces. We looked like a potato chip when we came in. All that salt just poured out and stuck on our outer skin. It was crazy.
Hmm.
Thank God we learned some things over the years.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Now you got a water stop at least every 2 miles on a marathon, I think. And
yeah, see, and that was a thing that just wasn't part of the olden days. Like it was typical marathon would probably have like four water stops, and they would think that's overkill. Back some years ago, they would think putting four water stops out was definitely going over the edge. Spoiling runners, but
I guess.
But you knew that, so it's just the way it was. You know, you didn't think that much about it. And we didn't have back then. We didn't have runners on course, you know, over 5 hours or 6 hours. So
right.
Most people were done. I remember the first half marathon I directed, which was 1980. There was I think two runners over 2 hours in the entire race. 600 runners. Now the median time in most half marathons is about 2:15.
Yeah, that's right.
And there were literally like two runners came in a little over 2 hours, and we gave out the awards and packed up and left. So it was different. You didn't need all the water stops out there because there weren't people out there that long. Now we got, you know, people out there, marathons 5.5, 6 hours, 6.5 hours. I do notice a lot of the European races have enforced cutoffs and have put serious cutoffs, like 6 hours in the marathon, some of them 6.5 hours, a lot of them 3 hours and a half marathon.
Okay.
I just got a message from a race in Australia, 2.5 hours in the half marathon. If you're not at this certain bridge by a certain point where they know you're not going to get under 2.5 hours, they just send you a little shortcut to go to the finish. You're not a finisher. You don't get a medal. You don't, you know, no results. But things are changing. I think cities have become tougher on races and say, we're not going to keep the roads open the amount of time that we used to. So that, I would think that's the only reason this is happening. I don't think the race directors are saying, we don't want these people running 6 hours on our race. I think it's the city officials coming at them and saying, hey, can't just close down the whole town. And
yeah, I wouldn't imagine that's the race directors. That just shoots themselves in the foot. And then
you
don't get participation. And
yeah, I was shocked that, you know, I get all these messages all the time. Is this happening in America? We're putting a 6 hour cap on our marathon. And we mean 6 hours. You come in after 6 hours, you don't get a medal, you're not in the results.
Hmm.
I said, no, it's not that, hasn't been that tough here, but maybe that's where it's going. The European races are doing it.
Hmm.
I don't know if it'll start there and migrate over here. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's some races that are at 6 hours, but I don't think it's like a hard six or anything.
Yeah, and that's, it's because they are saying it's hard. Like they're detouring people before they even get to the finish line. You know, they figure out where they can take people and either stop them and put them on a bus, or they come at the fin, they go to the finish line in a different direction, or, you know, a different detour or a detour, and then they don't count as a finisher and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I know that today the Boston Marathon turned away 11,000 runners.
I saw that the 5 minutes and 29 seconds.
Yeah, so it turned away 11,000. And, you know, I was getting all these texts about it, people complaining. And I said, you know, in the old days, we had to run 250. So,
yeah,
the old standards, that's what they should do. And then they would eliminate all this problem. Then it's just like, run faster, go after these tougher standards. And then the problem wouldn't exist. But I know, you know, people that they feel, I would like everyone that qualified to have the opportunity to enter and get in the race. So the only way to do that is to make the standards tougher.
Mm.
And that's what I think they should do. And if they made them as tough as we had them in the early 80s, then what would happen was, you know, when they open up registration, it wouldn't fill up. So people that like run Chicago or run Columbus or run Baltimore could actually get entered in Boston.
Right.
And that I think would be a better system. But to do that, to have openings for races happening later in the fall, they'd have to really toughen up the standards. And I'm just happy that they rolled out the age group in the BAA standards. Because in the old days, there were two times for men. 250, right. If you're under 40 years of age. If you're over 40, it was 310. And that meant over 40, that was 40 to 99. If you were a 99-year-old right. guy, you had to run 310.
Yeah.
Like, it made no sense. And the women, when it got to that really tough standard, 81 and 82, the women only had one standard. It was three, I think it was originally three, Three, yeah, it was 320. So it's 320 for women, no matter if you were 18 or 90.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy. That's... because a woman in her 60s would have to set a world record to qualify for Boston, or could have, right. or even maybe even set a world record in her age group and would not have made the Boston standard.
Right.
So that's when they realized, okay, we got to roll out these age groups. And that I think they did a great job on. I just think they make all of them 5 minutes faster. It'll alleviate all the problems.
Then the 11,000 that got cut off, they would have known they had to get that faster time, or they wouldn't even have been able to register. But
yeah, and I have some old booklets. We used to get these finisher booklets back in the early 80s, and they only recorded finishers at Boston 3 hours and 35 minutes. You came in 3 hours, 36 minutes, you weren't a finisher.
Wow.
So it was, and right now, even a race like Boston, if they got a normal weather day, the median time is like 3:40. So
yeah,
by the old standards, half the people in the race wouldn't be counted as a finisher if they went by the way, to what I'm going in the early 80s. It's much, much different. So when they come to me complaining, I always tell them, you're talking to the wrong guy. It's just, you know, you just got to run faster. That's all there is to it. And then, you know, if they don't change the standard, you know, you got to run somewhat, you know, whatever it is, faster than your qualifying time. Or, you know, hopefully the race will just toughen up the standards, and then everyone will be happy, I would assume. Although people will bitch that they toughen the standards, so.
Oh yeah.
But at least then, like I say, everyone who ran the qualifying time will get in. So we'll see. But anyway, I don't want to get you off course on race ready.
Oh no, I'm always up for talking about Boston.
I think actually a book should be named Race Ready.
Maybe your next book.
Yeah.
Could be your next book.
Yeah. If I start writing another book, I'm gonna have to make sure all my windows stay closed.
Yeah.
It's an arduous task, man. I am so glad what I'm on is 95% done. It's arduous. It really is. It's a hard thing to do, but it's rewarding in the end, but it's hard. But I really think someone who likes all the technical training and stuff, race ready, and someone who likes the mental part of it, you know, I think Race Ready would be a really cool book. We'll see if somebody
listens. Get to it, Bruce.
I'll jump on.
I'll do it in my spare time.
Too fun.
I'll get started on it. I've never written a book before, so I'll put that on the bucket list.
There you go. Well, I think Race Ready would be a good topic and would be well received.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So what else do we want to touch on?
Well, when we were talking about it, you did mention a few workouts. Was there any, when you were in the height of your training, you know, back in the day, was there certain workouts that you could point to tell you that physically you were race ready?
Yeah, if I wanted to really prove something to myself, mile repeats. I went to that track, run about 3.5 miles as a warm up, and then do some strides, and then 5 times a mile with a quarter, with 400 rest recovery. And that really told me if I was ready. Mile repeats they really test you. You can't go to a track and do, you know, 5 times a mile with 400 recovery and bake it. Like, there's no way. It's a brutal workout.
Yeah, it is.
That always told me I was ready to go, or, you know, I knew I was in good shape. Just had a.
How far out would you try to do that?
Like 3 weeks out. If I was really like wanted to test myself and say, okay, what kind of shape am I really in? I think that was my workout. Mm-hmm. People send me all their workouts all the time when they do Yatso 800s and stuff. And, you know, I see a lot where people, their warm up is just, you know, 10 minutes or, you know, 1 mile. I mean, I always did like 3.5 miles, minimum 3 miles. But usually like 3.5, and then some strides, and then do the workout. And then the cool down was always about 3 miles too. And I know a lot of the guys I worked did the track workouts with, they would, I'd be there a little late. I'm not going to do a 3 mile warm up. And then the same with the cool down, they'd run like a mile. So I'll hang out in my car. I'll catch you guys when we get done with it. Those were the guys that on race day didn't have it. And I think that was part of the deal. You know, you just got to do a good warm-up and a nice cool-down. And that allows you to do that real good quality. You're just cheating yourself by skimping on the warm-up and cool-down or stretching part of it, whatever you got to do. Whatever. There are no shortcuts in the sport of running. Got to do the work.
That's true.
Literally are no shortcuts. I know Matt Kaplesky, who of course you guys know, Matt told me one time, he said, you know, when I was doing track at UCLA, he said, I never missed the drills and all the stuff they did, which wasn't just running, like all these drills they did for the track and all this kind of stuff. And he said, I never missed one of them. And he noticed that guys would blow those off. You know, they'd say, I just finished this test. I'll be late, you know, because they knew they were just doing these crazy drills. Meb said, never missed one of them. I think that paid him dividends throughout his career.
Yeah,
sure.
Because he carried that mindset into, you know, getting out of college and then getting away from being a 10,000 meter runner to being a half marathoner and a marathoner. And he had that mindset, like whatever warm up you did or stretching you did, you always do it. There is no like saying, I don't really need to do that. And I think that's one of the mistakes people don't make, or they've made. Well, they don't get into, you know, really thinking it's not that important. They look at it like, okay, I did the hard stuff. The warm up and cool down is not really that important, but it really is.
Well, yeah, I guess that's, you know, we're talking about being race ready. What are some things that are the opposite of being race ready, would just, you know, so you're kind of talking about that now, but like, what are some other things that you see?
Trying, you know, even though you feel good, you don't do the whole workout just because you're just not into it or whatever it is. That's just not a good thing. And, you know, I never did that many drills. I did pickups and stuff like that, but you know, whatever I did, I never went to that track and just, you know, doing a serious track workout and said, today I'm just going to run a mile for a warm up. That never happened. Mm-hmm. So I think I was lucky. I didn't realize it back then, but looking back, it was a smart thing to do because it benefited me. My muscles were warm. I was ready to go. And that could be another reason why I was one of those people that rarely got injured.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, running, warming up properly, stretching properly, doing all that stuff there's benefits to it.
Yeah, and taking the time, like really concentrating on it. Because it takes, you know, warming up for 3 miles takes a lot longer than warming up for 1 mile.
You got that right, yeah.
The stretching and the, you know, all of that stuff. It takes a lot of extra time. You got to show up early and, it's a lot more.
Yeah, and I don't do that stuff anymore. I mean, I haven't gone to a track to do a track workout in many, many years.
Yeah.
But you know, if people come to me for advice, that's one thing I always tell them. Like, they show me what their workout was. I tell them right out. Didn't warm up long enough. Didn't cool down. Didn't do any drill. Didn't do any pickups before you got, you know, warmed up. Said that's what you need to add to this workout. So I'm honest with them.
Yeah. Hey, if they're asking, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're gonna send me your workout and ask me, I'm gonna tell you the truth. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it.
Right.
And I get total strangers just send me their stuff. You know, once you've got Facebook, Instagram, what used to be Twitter and now called X, people know how to get a hold of you. And I try to help everyone I can. I just can't help injury stuff because I'm not a doctor, so I will tell someone that I knew a person that had similar problems and this is what they did and it helped them. But that's not, I'm not diagnosing what's wrong with them. I'm just saying, you know, I will speak experience that I had or experience that someone I personally know has had. But, you know, I can't. I get a lot of people and email me about their injuries and I just cannot just say, I'm not a doctor. You can't ask me these questions. Like,
it's like the question is, what does your doctor say about that? What's your advice? What does the doctor say?
Go to your doctor. That's a perfect answer.
Runners are famous for not listening to their doctors.
Well, that's, I think, that why they reach out to me and say, oh, yeah, they'll give me some advice and then tell me to go out and do 10 miles. And that's what I do. I'm a firm believer in, I know one, you know, there's so much about getting to the starting line. You know, if you really did the training, you're going to finish the race, but you got to get to that starting line in the right frame of mind and you got to be healthy. You can't be beat up. Go to the start of a race. That just doesn't work. You know, especially so, if you're trying to run fast time and, you know, you're really
focused. Yeah.
If you're like, when I did the back-to-back marathon, I was in a relaxed state. I didn't, you know, I did run a little bit faster on the Saturday than I thought I would, but I wasn't really like all out racing. And the Sunday race, I just, you know, thought I would be sore and beat up, even, you know, slowing down a little bit, but you're still running 26.2 miles. But I think just having that laid back, no pressure, you know, just go out there and do it. I think it really helped.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, I'm in taper mode right now.
Yeah.
I just had my last 20 miler. I think Bruce, you might be in taper. You might have one more long, really long run. So what's the advice? How do we get race ready in these last couple of weeks?
Yeah,
I mean,
race
the
ready.
hard work is kind of done, but I mean, how do we get race ready in the taper?
Race ready with the taper. First off, when you taper, you're cutting back on everything, but you don't quit running. You know, you just take back on everything, and then store up that energy. But you can't get up. You know, there's so many people that they turn into a hypochondriac when they go in that are tapered. They said, "Oh my God, I'm sneezing. I got a cold. I got a fever," and they're like, you know, they get a little crazy. Yeah. So you got to enjoy the taper. Be happy that you're cutting back. Be happy that you're taking it easy. You get to spend more time at home, be around your family more. Mm. You know, look at the happy part of it. Don't just focus on, oh, man, every Tuesday we've been doing 10. Now I'm only doing 6. This is ridiculous. You know, and people really get this mindset that when they start tapering and cutting back that they're just losing fitness. It's disappearing. Mm. And the exact opposite happened. You're actually storing energy and getting stronger. And if you can get more rest, that's really key. If you can really get some extra sleep, the taper. And then be smart about what you eat. So since you're cutting back on your amount of running, you're not burning as many calories. So even though you should really eat well, you should really pay attention to the quantity that you're eating because you are cutting back. We tend to just, you know, get used to what we normally eat. When you're in a pretty hard training cycle, training for a marathon, you can eat a fair amount of food. So in that taper, you don't want to overdo it on the food and put on some extra weight in the last 3 weeks. Just got to be smart about that.
Yeah.
I've always been a terrible sleeper. I don't know how people sleep. I'm so envious of people that can sleep late. I mean, I used to fly, you know, like 140,000 actual air miles every year to do like 40 plus trips a year in an airplane. And I never slept 1 minute in an airplane. And I used to see these people like planes going down the runway. They're already snoring. Like, how do they do that? So jealous of those people. And the same with, you know, I never been asleep past like 6 o'clock in the morning, ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, ever. So I don't set an alarm, and I'm always up by 5 o'clock at the latest these days. So I wish I could sleep. I hear people sleep and they take naps. I try to take a nap. I can't take a nap for 1 minute. That just doesn't work. I don't know if I just high strung something, you know. But I wish. Because I know there are benefits. Your body really recovers. You get rejuvenated if you can get some sleep. I just can't do it. If I get 5 hours of sleep a night, I'm like, wow, that is awesome. And I never wear my Garmin to bed because I don't want to look at the sleep thing that says I only got like 30 minutes of sound sleep and the rest was restless. Right. I know it already. I don't need to look at it on paper and make it worse than it already is. But for people that can sleep, do it. If you can take a nap, if you have that luxury, take a nap, especially in that taper. It'll really do you some good. I'm just like the world's worst sleeper. I don't know. I wish I could do it, but I can't.
I've been doing my long run nap.
What's that?
Throughout the training cycle, it seems like every Saturday when I was running, I was ending up with a long run. That was the day I was able to nap.
Really? That's awesome. And that's the day to do it because that's the most taxing workout on your body. The most taxing workout is the one that you spent the longest time on your feet. So that long run is the most taxing. So that's, man, if you could take a nap, that's awesome. It's just it's foreign to me. I cannot do it. I tried everything. And I'm not going to take, you know, I take some melatonin and stuff like that. Doesn't work. But I'm not going to take like sleeping pills. That's just not.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't go that far.
Live on lack of sleep. I get a lot of emails done. And people always say, why are you emailing me at 3 o'clock in the morning?
You get that book done.
Yeah, there you go. That's too funny. So what else we got going on? Anything else you want to cover? Rick, are you race ready?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm just over here convincing myself I'm race ready.
You know, that should be a seminar that we do. Race ready. Yeah. You need to do it like 6 weeks before the race so people know what to do over the next 6 weeks leading up to it. I think that's a cool idea. Because all those seminars good. On the, you know, people go to seminars the day before the race, and then, you know, someone gets up there and says, oh, you need to do this and this and this. And people are like, oh, wow, I did the exact opposite.
Yeah, right. And the race is tomorrow.
This is stuff they tell you should have been doing the last 2 weeks, and you didn't do any of it. Right. You did the exact opposite. Then you go to your room and just like lay in bed and you're depressed. Mm. So if we do the race seminar like 6 weeks out, well, we've got everything covered, and then they could actually do it correctly.
That's the God I remember. Boston, I did
panels. They all said all this crazy training stuff that we should have done a month ago, and it was like, the race is tomorrow. What are you guys talking about? I said, this is crazy. I walked out. I just couldn't. It just made no sense to me. Talk about stuff I was supposed to do 2 months ago. The race is the next day. Didn't make much sense. But we have to do a race-ready seminar with a bunch of people leading up to a race, but we do it 6 weeks out. That would be cool. And then follow up with the people after the race, see if we helped them out.
That's a plan. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the Bethlehem Running Festival at all?
Sure. Yeah. So there was another last thing I did at Runner's World before I left. We launched this race in our hometown where our office was. Well, our office was right outside of Bethlehem, but we did it in the confines of Bethlehem because it's a beautiful historic city, and we had these new entertainment centers that opened up that would really be conducive to putting on a race. So we put on the Runner's World Running Festival, and that went on from 2012 to 2019. And then before COVID even was a thing, Runner's World said they're going to discontinue doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID hit, and of course no one was going to bring it back. But this group approached me. Well, there were a lot of groups that approached me about bringing it back, but the one group that approached me, I really felt like they were sincere and really knew what they were doing and really wanted to do it. So I said, I will get you guys going. I know the mayor and who we got to talk to, set up some meetings, and we got the city to commit to it. We cut back on one of the races. We're just doing a Saturday, a 5K and a 10K, and Sunday, a half marathon, just the three races. But yeah, and then they call it the Bethlehem Running Festival. But it's been fun to help these guys out and get it going. And I changed some of the course based on the feedback I got from the police. We were able to, you know, change the course and run under one main artery that runs east-west, so they can get more traffic flow that way. You know, all runners think you can just, you know, set up a course and run wherever you want, and that's not the case. You really, I've designed a lot of courses. You design a course by looking at east-west, north-south, that emergency vehicles can get to hospitals and get to where they need to go.
Mm.
And then you work in the confines of that, and then figure out the detours that people are going to have to take. And then you go to the police with all that information. Then the police will actually be nice to you and talk to you. If you go in and say, we're going to use this road, and this road, and tie up the entire town and cut off all the, you know, access ways to get to hospitals and stuff, they're going to throw you out the door. I always love doing that. It's just I don't know, looking at maps. I've always been good with maps. I just love figuring it all out. Of course, now I do it on a computer versus getting out the old folding maps.
Right.
But I'm excited about it. It is in 3 weeks coming up, so we'll see what happens. We'll get about 3,000 runners in total, and most
that's
good. A high percentage of the people are doing all three races.
Oh wow! So, yeah, that's really fun.
Yeah. We have them set up, 5K at 8 a.m. and then 10K at 9:30 on Saturday, and then half marathon at 8 o'clock on Sunday. So there is plenty of time, and people love doing these multiple races. I'll tell you, I never, when Disney first did it, they were not the first ones to do it, but they took it to a whole nother level very quickly.
Yeah.
When they first did the Goofy, the half on Saturday and the marathon on Sunday, and they thought, well, because I know the people that were in that meeting, I wasn't in the meeting, but they would have told me, they were honest. They said, maybe we thought 500 runners would do it. And opened up the registration, and the first 2 days, 1,500 people signed up to do both races. Mm-hmm. And then they realized, wow, we got to put a cap on this because we don't know how this is going to work. But Disney was, I got to hand it to them, they really paved the way for these multi-races.
Yeah. I did that one. I did that at Disney.
You did the Goofy or the Dopey? Because now
the Dopey.
So now it's 4 races in 4 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I did that about 5 years ago.
Yeah. So originally it was just the Goofy. And then there was kind of like a informal 5K Friday night that some people started, and they just kind of did it.
Yeah.
And that's when they said, okay, we'll make it official. And then they added the 10K. And so you really just, you keep building up 5K, 10K, half marathon. And people just love it. 5 shirts, 5 medals.
Right.
And it's so funny. Runners come up to me. I used to go to that race all the time. They come up to me and say, Bart, look at all the shirts we got and all these medals we got. I go, you do know what you paid to enter this race. You bought all this stuff. They did. They did personally give it to you, but you bought it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It's not an easy, it's not a cheap race, as you know. You did it.
Yeah, and I live in Ohio. I had to get to Florida, so.
Yeah. But I love that runners are so delusional about it that they my God, people just gave us this stuff. It's so funny. I'm like, no, you actually bought that, believe it or not. They handed it to you, but you bought. It's so funny. But in another way, you earned it too, because you got to go out and do the races. So yes, it is kind of fun. But it is, I always cracked up. And they go, and I got 5 shirts. And I'm like, yeah, I'm well aware of what you get. I'm tuned in to what's going on here. But it cracks me. People, I'm shocked how many international runners would come to do it. I was shocked. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
A lot of races then took that blueprint and ran with it. Because it does... I work with the Philly Marathon. We do the half on Saturday, the marathon on Sunday, and people really like that. And we also do an 8K on Saturday, so people can do all three. And people and it just makes for a better race experience, because the way we do it, when you do the half marathon, everyone in the race is doing the half marathon. When you do the 8K, everyone's doing the 8K. When you do the marathon, everyone's doing the marathon. The worst thing is to do a marathon where the marathon and half run together for 12 and a half miles, and then the half marathon splits. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those races, it's like a 80-20 or sometimes even 90-10. So you get to the split and you're one of the people doing the marathon, and 9 people turn left and 1 goes straight. And you're like, wow, what did those people know that I don't know? And they're going to be eating breakfast and having fun in another 5 minutes. And you're going out to do another 15 miles.
And you can hear them celebrating too. You can hear the party.
You hear the race
announcer. Kind of demoralizing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You hear the race announcer calling names, and they're all partying and happy. And you're, I want those people that went straight. And there was, I've done some races where it's 90-10. 9 people turn left and 1 person goes straight. That's
I have done those too.
But, and then hopefully the marathoners are impressed when you come in because you went out there and did the marathon, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
they could have had so many beers by the time you finish that they don't even know who you are, even if they're your friend.
Right.
But that's different. And that doesn't happen on like the way Disney has it set up and the way Philly has it set up. Everyone in your race is the same race. So it is a better way to do it if you can close the streets and, you know, the stuff. Got to convince the city into doing that. It's not that easy.
Well, it sounds like you've, I don't know, you were, I guess, to tie it into our theme, you were race ready in the preparations. I mean, you said you know the mayor. I mean, that's got to help.
Yeah.
As part of that step. But I mean, your experience too in designing the courses and knowing how to work with the municipality. I mean, that's as race ready as putting in the miles.
Yeah. You got to get the mayor involved, other city officials, the police department, Parks and Rec. You get them all.
Yep.
You know, and I knew them all, so I had all their cell phone numbers. They had my cell phone numbers. We just started contacting. So this group wants to bring it back. The city wanted it back because they want the revenue, and pay the city a fair amount of money, and the local merchants. I really like that the local merchants, they used to send me messages that they love the race because, they said, whenever there's other festivals, people just come in and want to use our bathroom and our, whatever, their candy shop or whatever it is. And they said, these runners come in, they buy stuff. We love it. And it makes me happy. You always receive some complaints after a race.
Sure.
It always makes somebody mad. And we have a serious meeting with 41 churches and, telling them what roads are going to be closed and what they need to tell their everyone, their people, when the streets are going to be closed, what ways they can come in. Some of the churches are really nice and they change the timing of their service. And some of the churches tell me, hey, we got more people than we usually do because we did it later in the day or earlier in the morning. And some of the churches are smart and it works out, and then some just will not budge and then they just complain. What are you going to do? The whole idea of I communicate and tell them this city gave us permission to run this course, so we're not
right.
I designed a course again to make sure that the city can operate. There are detours and there are emergency access roads, but also you got to show a city. So we do run on Main Street. We only use half of the Main Street. We do run in some very pretty neighborhoods, which is really cool. And some of those neighborhoods, they love it. They say, thank you for coming down our street. Nothing ever happens on our street. The fancy streets with the big houses and nobody goes down the street. And they always tend to be newer developments and they build the roads that they don't go anywhere, just wind around. Right. So they're actually really nice to take a race through and they just don't get a lot of through traffic because they're not really a shortcut to anything. So it kind of works out. But
maybe Bruce, what do you say? Maybe next year we'll go. If they do it again next year, we'll go and do it.
This group is committed to doing it for a couple of years and the city's committed to a couple of years. So we'll see what happens. But it'd be fun to have you guys. I have some people staying at my house and somebody parking an RV in I have two driveways. Someone's parking an RV in my other driveway. They said, we'll live in our RV. We don't even want to come in your house. And I said, well, you can come in my house. Like, I'm here. So come in my house. We're friends. But they didn't want to be, get in the way. They said, you got a lot going on. I said, no, that's all right, man. I got to talk to my friends. It's not like race directing is not an easy thing.
No, but I am not
the race director. The group that's taking it over are the race director. I'm considered the race host and design the courses, make the police happy, and also do stuff race weekend. But I told them the real key is to, I know everyone, we have to get in a room and get the permission to do it. That's the key.
Yeah, it sounds like they got the right guy for it, though.
Yeah, if you don't get the permission, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Before we go, This weekend, you're going to be kind of busy with a race. You ready for that one?
Yeah, I'm heading to Wine Glass. Yeah, I do the race announcing at the Wine Glass Marathon every year. I went there in 2013 to be their guest speaker at their dinner. And ever since then, they won't let me go. They have me back every year. I love it. It's a really fun race. It's a really small town in Corning, New York. I can drive to it. It's only a little over 3 hour drive. And man, it's fun. It's a fast course. It's just, I don't know. There's something about it. It's so fun when you go into a small town, a town of 10,000 people. We have 10,000 runners. So like the town doubles in population in one day. But the merchants love it. The little town loves it. They get 2,500 volunteers.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they have groups that they work on this all year. These kids, cross-country teams and track teams and soccer teams, they just can't wait to do this. They think it's the most fun thing to, like, cheer on runners. They love it. So something, this area and the Corning area, somebody just got this race going, and it's unbelievable how much fun it is. So I convinced Mevin to come in to be a guest speaker in 2019, and he thought, you know what, this is like out in the middle of nowhere. Are you sure about this? And I said, don't worry, you're going to get paid what you normally get paid. And I said, really, you're going to have fun. Trust me on this. He had so much fun. He just said, it's unbelievable. He felt like you meet more people when there's a race of 10,000 than a race of 50,000. Because when there's 50,000, you're in a big city, and it's not just right. All the runners. When you're in a smaller town, you walk down the street, everyone walking down the street is running the race. And right. So he talked to people nonstop. He had so much fun. He had so much fun, he came back in 2000. So we didn't have it in 2020, but he came back in 2021. And said, oh my God, he had so much fun. So I'll be texting him this weekend from Wine Glass, sending him some pictures. I'll make him jealous.
That's great.
He really had that much fun in this race. It's just a, I don't know, it's just a cool setting, and it's just, the race has a nice vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all races should have. Races should have a spirit and a vibe. That's another thing I notice. A lot of European races, they have like, so they have their name or their race, and then they have like a little theme with their, you know, like a little four word or three word or, you know, little theme that they have with their race. And it's really a cool idea. You know, whether it's
like, what? What's an example of,
so like, what you mean? Like Vietnam, they call it the City for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
They call it a heritage race for peace. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What did I see? Where there's stuff like, we have, this race is for everyone. Just little simple things, but that's like the main, like when you click on their website, it has, you know, the name of the race, and then right below it, we are a race for everyone.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that would be inviting to me. You know, I don't want to click on a race and see like all the, you got to do this, you got to do this kind of stuff. I just, you know, something plain and simple, some really cool theme.
Yeah.
It goes a long way. And I noticed a lot of the European races have that. Paris Marathon was something, it was what was in French, but it was just two words. Everyone is welcome, or maybe it was three words. But yeah, maybe it was everyone's welcome. Man, and then they said there, and then below that it said like 43% of their runners are first time marathoners.
That's neat.
Wow. That would make me pick that race if I was thinking about first time marathon.
Right.
Send me to a race that has 43% new people. You're the majority of the race.
Right.
That would make you feel pretty good, because I know first time marathoners always think that oh my God, I'm going to this race and everyone's a professional and everyone's
right.
And everyone has all these marathon shirts and I've never done a marathon. So they feel like, you know, not like a second class citizen.
Right, then, like outsiders. And...
Yeah, but then thankful to the running community because the running community always makes a big deal about those first timers.
Yeah, that's right.
Even the race announcing I do when I know that someone's a first timer, announce it, the crowd goes wild.
Mm-hmm.
People are taken back. Like they think, you know, they think that no one cares. Or, you know, they're going to be dead last in the race and all that kind of stuff. But as you guys know, the exact opposite happens when someone says, this is their first marathon. And then I always, when I meet them like the day before and they tell me it's their first marathon, I always say, no crying until you cross that finish line. Once you cross the finish line, you can cry for an hour if you want, but get across right. that line. I remember telling this to a friend of mine, and she's running her first Boston Marathon, and she said to herself, like, I'm not going to cry until I cross the finish line. So she makes the right on Hereford, and she's just about to turn left on Boylston. And some drunk Irish Boston guy, drunk out of his mind, literally drunk. I was standing right there, and the guy was like, he looks at this first runner and makes eye contact and said, you're going to finish. And he used the F word, Boston yeah. Marathon. And the tears started right then and there. But the way he yelled it. You're going to finish the freaking Boston Marathon. But he was drunk and he screamed it at this runner. And then the tears, I could see the tears like hitting the street. The tears flowed. Mm. It's so funny.
That's great. That's amazing.
Yeah. Boston has some unique stuff to it.
That's so true.
There are people out there that had too much fun during the whole day. Well, you know, people that are coming in at 2 p.m, there are a lot of people that had, I mean, it's a holiday for them.
Right. Right.
So they're out there partying, having fun. They got a day off and they don't stand around. And most of the runners that, if they don't have someone, or most of the people, if they don't have someone in the race that they know, they go down there just to go to the bars and drink and eat.
And right.
See, but they're not really following the race. But then on their way home, they'll cheer a couple of runners on. It's too fun. All right, guys. Anything else?
No, I just want to thank you again for coming on and talking
with us. Thank you, man. This was a great chat.
Yeah, Bart, I actually, if you'll forgive me, I do have one more thing because I'm thinking about themes of races and all of that. And have you ever heard of Youngstown's International Peace Race?
Oh yeah, I've heard of that race. Yeah, it's one of those that I've never done it, but it's a race I always heard.
Well, so I mean, so I don't. If you've already heard of it, I mean, Frank Shorter won the thing in 1975. Yeah. I think it was 75, and said it was the most beautiful course in America. Of course, the course is about, you know, a mile as the crow flies from my house, and next year's the 50th anniversary. And I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. If, you know, maybe Bruce and I come out and do Bethlehem Running Festival next year, you come out and be part of the peace race for the 50th anniversary.
What's the date of the peace race usually?
This year it's October.
This year, October 8th. So it's
early
October.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I know it's a busy time. I'm not a part of the board or anything like that. I'm just, I'm a guy who lives in Youngstown.
Yeah,
who loves to run, who loves his community, who loves his park.
And that, you know? I love that name of that race. I mean, I do remember that race from back in the 70s. I do remember it.
Yep.
But it's one of those races I've never done. I get it.
Well, I'm floating the idea now, and you talk about people, you know, you're 100 yards in, and there are people in their front yard already partying at 9 a.m. So,
yeah.
They already get started, but I'm float the idea now, and we'll
I like that idea.
We'll be in touch about it. We'll
All
be
right.
in touch about it.
We'll stay in touch
for sure.
Well, all right, guys.
Sure.
Thanks, Bart. Looking forward to the book too.
Yeah. I'll get you some info when I can do that.
Right. I'm looking all forward to that. And thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for reaching out to me. I'll stay in touch.
Good. Thanks for being here, Rick. And we'll be in touch again.
Yeah. All right. See you.
Thank you.